Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. I'm Jody, your best friend and inner voice, as together we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. For all premium content and bonus episodes, become a member at patreon.com/realitytvpod. You can also find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at realitytvpod or realitytvpodcast.com for links and so much more. And now, on with the show. Oh, my darling apples of Claremont, are you going to be happy you came to pick the apples in the orchard today? We don't have just regular old red delicious apples in our amazing Facebook family. We have the Honeycrisp, the Golden Delicious, the Pink Lady apples that, when blended together, stirred around in some piping hot gossip. Man, we have some scalding, spicy cider that I am going to spill today in regards to Dimitri and Ashley. And for those of you asking, what the hell is Jody talking about with all this apple shit? Well, it's a joke that started with Evelyn from 90 Day Fiancé when she wouldn't shut up about how Claremont, New Hampshire has the best apples of all the apples. So we've made it our own. Fun fact, we own Claremont Orchard now. So let's just get Sister Wives out of the way. Quite frankly, is there any way to top last week's wedding episode? Thankfully, I got to see the first dance where Tony looked like he was in the middle of a polar bear attack trying to fling McKelty off his back. And my favorite, please be careful, you might get smacked by a stick. Got to hear that one again. Now, it's clear Robin won't be heard from anymore because she's gotten what she's always wanted all along, to become legal first wife. She's keeping her yapper shut to keep that in place. And Christine, well, we've had her fill of the spotlight as Tony's taco investor. So we got 2 whole hours of Janelle and Mary, Droopy Dog Mary, and Grammy Gummy Bear Janelle. Just 2 obscure 80s cartoon characters come to life, wandering around DC, reminding us why this show is being canceled. We start out with Cody running around, trying to hide his boner for Caleb. He's taken a few days off from his non-existent job to help pack up and move Maddie and Caleb into Janelle's house. But you know, Cody doesn't want us to be too hard on these young newlyweds. You know, the ones who insisted on getting married in a very short time frame, the ones who chose to have a baby and chose not to be employed but rather go to school. Someone, please tell me what Caleb, at the ripe old age of, what is he, 32 now? What is he studying in college? Because unless he's a doctor, maybe it's time you put that backpack down and pick up a burger to flip because you're getting too old to be just dicking around still, Caleb. Now, clearly, the Browns are thrilled to have Maddie back because she's probably one of the few kids that will actually tell Mary that she's being a bitch. And with Caleb upstairs, Cody will always have a bro he can wrestle with. You know, guy time. The Browns are certified in making life difficult. So when they need to back in the trailer into Janelle's driveway, you'd think they were planning to land Air Force 1 and 2 in the cul-de-sac. At one point, Cody asks his BFF Caleb to push the Jeep while he steered it down the block, and Cody just keeps running with it. Oh, Caleb, he's such a prankster. I have an idea. How about we see what you're hiding under that stupid hat, buddy? Caleb's hat is Cody's wig. Both of them hanging out for dear life because they're balding. Just buzz it down, guys. Bald is kind of in. This is your time. Let's just make a deal. We will all embrace your polygamous lifestyle if you just embrace baldness. Now, the baldness is just about the only thing I can accept with Caleb, however, because besides the fact that he's a middle-aged man that acts like he's a sprightly 22-year-old, it's just that he's a brat. Did you hear what he said when Cody referred to his and Caleb's vehicles as trucks? Caleb whispers to Maddie, that's an SUV. Mine is a truck, but I won't say anything. Yeah, it's best you're not, considering Cody just moved all your shit a few hundred miles into a home he is paying for after he paid for your dream wedding, and he's likely to be paying for the food that you are shoving past your pubic beard. So yeah, maybe not share your thoughts on the big new truck you have that you can afford, but you can't afford rent. Now, some of you may be saying, Jody, you're being a little too harsh on him, aren't you? Well, I don't really think so, because I think Caleb is acting like Janelle and Cody are the ones who pulled him away from some lucrative logging or racing business or some shit to come move in for Janelle and Cody's benefit. It's a dream come true, tell you what. Well, then maybe you and Maddie get jobs and make your dreams come true. Just a thought. And the other piece of the puzzle that was kind of left out until now, or at least I didn't know about it, was that Caleb had a pulmonary embolism a few months ago. Now, I consulted with my girl Kim, who hosts the podcast People Are Wild. You'll be hearing from her a little bit later. She's a badass nurse who, she knows her stuff, okay? And she's confirmed for me that pulmonary embolisms are serious shit. But if you stay on blood thinners and stuff, you'll probably most likely be okay, but you got to keep an eye on your symptoms. So I'm not going to snark on his health issue, but wouldn't it make more sense for him to be closer to his family then? Or how about you take this opportunity to tell us what the symptoms are? But no, because it's more important that we have a gender reveal party. Why must they have a party every time Truly opens a fucking Go-Gurt or Solomon burps or one of the kids brings over a friend who isn't one of Robin's cousins? Janelle claims it's because it's the style to do this huge party. No, not the style. It's a style. It's just something Maddie wants because she needs attention, so we're all going to indulge it now. It's so freaking stupid. They're asking everyone what they think the baby's going to be, a boy or a girl, and they're cutting out all these favors for only themselves to wear. Like, no other people came except for people with last name Brown that are residing in the cul-de-sac. So they try to bring Solomon into this, ask him what little baby Saul thinks. But you know who had to baby talk her way into the conversations? Twice. If it's a girl, it should be Lucy or something. Oh, wait, not everyone heard you on the Las Vegas Strip, truly. Yell louder, okay? Now fast forward through this because I can't take another second even talking about truly. These favors are pointless because Caleb takes charge in handing out all these pink and blue balloons. Whichever balloon inflates, that's going to be the sex of the baby. Well, 1.9 seconds in, all the blue balloons are inflating, but Maddie's yelling at everyone to just keep blowing them up anyway. Okay. So obviously it's a boy. They're naming him Axel James because she had some stupid dream with a kid saying, "Hi, mommy, my name is Axel James." Now, the fact that this kid is almost 1 year old in real time now should have made TLC hit the snooze bar on the storyline when they started backing that damn trailer up in the driveway. Well, we talked about Janelle's daughter, who I used to love, but have since turned salty on. And now we have the reverse case. Mary's daughter, who I used to be all salty over, Mariah, but she has since fallen back into my good graces. Mariah's back from college, and she called a little meeting in the living room of doom. She's invited only Mary and Janelle, which is the oddest combination of moms you can put together. And while Mariah's not nervous, she's excited, but she's not going to tell us what it is that she's talking about. Well, right away, we get a clip of Mary saying, "A couple years ago, I was catfished, and after that, things got pretty negative with Mariah and I." Ah, yes. An internet catfish just jumped through your firewall and landed in your text messages when you were taking a bath and deep-throating that banana. Sure, Jan. Well, since then, things have been pretty rocky between these two because, I mean, well, basically, Mariah sees Mary for who she is, like we all do. She's a selfish brat who loves to stir drama up and then make herself a victim. So while they're waiting for Grammy Gummy, you can tell Mary is trying to get Mariah to just to tell her whatever it is. Like she wants her to share it before Janelle gets there because it has to kill her that Janelle is going to learn something about her own daughter at the same moment that she learns of it herself. So during this waiting room scene, Mary's asking Mariah if she has something to do for finals. And Mariah's like, I already done with finals. Perhaps Mary didn't read the pinned post. Well, Janelle finally arrives after bathing and brushing Maddie's hair. And Mariah explains how there's this thing called a March on Washington. And it's for, women's rights and gay rights. It's just so weird. I wish that TLC would have spent more than 75 minutes explaining to us what this march was about. Do you remember where was it again? Who was supposed to go? You think we would have read about it or heard it somewhere? Well, in any event, she's hoping these two rays of sunshine and positivity will come with her. Janelle's intrigued, but she's got to think about it. Not because of the event itself, but because she'd have to be stuck with Mary during the travel portion. For real, not making a joke. And Mary is already committing to going because she thinks it's going to help heal the relationship with Mariah. Well, that kind of positive attitude and commitment. Next up, healing the relationship with her eyebrows. Hashtag time's up. A few days later, Janelle's made up her mind to go. But now, oh boy. They need to call another meeting to tell the family that they're going to be going to D.C. for this march. This is so telling that they never really interact with each other. Yes, I know they need to film scenes for the show, but it's how they greet one another. You can tell that they haven't seen each other for weeks. So this is how we begin. Cody says to Mary, "You called us over here, so..." So warm and loving. Well, Mary says, "It's about Mariah. She's going to Washington to do this woman's march, and she's asked Janelle and I to go with her." I mean, always with the anxious pauses. It's the tone and how Mary says stuff with these cliffhangers that makes everything she says sound like it should be a point of contention. I've decided that the carrots and veggie celery cups should have Kraft Ranch dressing instead of Hidden Valley because I already bought it. Okay, God damn it, Mary. Well, you know whose wheels are turning, though? Brother Brown. Mary, this seems awfully political to me. No, what would make you think that? Cody, I tell you, with a mind like yours, I bet you could string some lights across the cul-de-sac. Well, this back and forth with Cody not understanding is really just about him wanting Janelle and Mary to go to his rally instead. Now, during this time, they are talking about their friend Joe Darger. I had to look it up. I knew it sounded familiar. Well, it's the guy who is from that My Three Wives show that used to be on TLC. And Cody's argument is that women and gays shouldn't need to be marching or protesting because they already have their rights, but polygamists don't. So you should be going to our rally. Now, for the sake of not blowing this microphone's internal speakers or wires, let's just say Cody is exactly what is wrong in, he said, perceived disparity and actual disparity. It's white men like him and their brains. They haven't lived it or experienced it. And it doesn't affect them. So why should I have empathy or care about it? And you know, Little Miss Gay Acceptance Robin, don't think I didn't hear her balk at Janelle when Janelle said something like, "I think the point of the march is for women to say, you know, we're here and we're being active." And you hear Robin pipe up in the background saying, "We're here." Yeah, we're here, Robin. You know, here to make sure the laws that helped you open and get loans for your little jewelry hobby business are protected. Okay, I really do need to take a deep breath. I could go on and on and on, but I'm gonna save that anger for Dimitri and Ashley in a bit. Okay, well, actually, one more thing. For the record, you frizzy, thin-haired, misguided, ill-informed, self-righteous, willfully ignorant, Ed Hardy, wannabe-wearing, boss of his own church. Cody, women do not make up half of the legislature. For the record, only 19.8% of our United States Congress is comprised of women, and only 24% of all state legislators are women. So go choke on some Trace Late J's with Tony, you wilting, balding turd. Oh God, I can't tell you how good that felt. So in the end, Mary and Janelle are going, no matter what the cause is, because they are there to support and repair the relationship with Mariah. Now fast forward to the therapist appointment. In a shocking twist, Janelle admits that if she were someone who drank, she'd definitely be thinking about knocking some back before these appointments with Mary. I would love to gather a bunch of us, get Janelle tipsy, and just let her rip about some good old Mary stories. That is a girl's weekend that would be legendary. Now, it's no surprise that Mary and Janelle can't stand each other, right? But every season, TLC tries to make it a new storyline. No, we already know. They don't talk. They sit on opposite ends of the couch every time. They never look at one another. And we've even been there as they try to make Thanksgiving centerpieces at the wet bar. They're just not meant to be. She's just not that into you, and it's mutual. But we need footage. So into the therapy room we go, and we learn that Mary is mad because Janelle answered a question during a press interview. The woman was looking right at me. I know it. She was. Mary, I didn't see that, and no one else in the room saw it. I want you to say you're sorry. Yeah, well, I'm not because I didn't do anything wrong. Man, Mary's side-eye jaw-clenching was terrifying. I can see why Janelle just retreats. So the therapist, who I can confirm with no evidence, has dream catchers, woven earth tone tapestries from the Mojave Desert hung on display, and a collection of Yo-Yo Ma CDs at home, asks if Janelle can see how Mary gets defensive. And Mary, do you see that you're defensive? I think people perceive me as wrong. Ah, yes. Everyone on Earth perceives you wrong. Maybe you perceive you wrong. I also like the icing on the victim cupcake when Mary says she gets aggressive because she has to stand up for herself because no one else will. Maybe they don't stand up for you because you are wrong or you're being a brat. Well, at least Janelle is saying she's open to reframing her thinking and her actions. Mary says, I can see that, but I'm still nervous about it. She is the worst. I hope she just leaves and lives in that haunted dollhouse. Now, after the commercial break, we find Mary cooking breakfast because Mariah and her friends are coming over. The whole family has come to the conclusion that Mariah is going to tell them she has a girlfriend, so they keep pushing the issue to make her even more uncomfortable about it. Good strategy, Browns. Well, when Mariah finally does get there and introduces her friends, Mary starts looking at her and asking, do you want to talk to just me first? Maybe you should just talk to me alone first. Oh, it kills her that Mariah treats all the moms the same, and I love it. Well, after getting bullied into it, we get an extremely awkward, it had to be a good 20 seconds of silence, and then Mariah just says, Audrey and I are dating. Oh, okay, congrats. Who says congrats to dating, by the way? 3 weeks. Okay, they've been together for 3 weeks, for fuck's sake. They haven't even gotten their periods and survived being PMS-y together. Let's just slow the celebration down. Well, the rest of the family comes over and they pull all the parents outside. It's so unnecessarily awkward. I mean, do they do this every time someone is just dating? It seems weird. If Mariah were to say we're engaged, it might be different, but this is just too much. Well, on their way out, Mary is purposely putting her arm around Audrey as if to point out, well, I already know. Oh, I'm just so in with Audrey. See, I knew it first, ladies. Ugh, she's just so transparent in her motives. In the end, it was good to see that all the moms were cool about meeting Audrey. They'll give her hugs. Cody was clearly uncomfortable, but you know what? He did his best in asking Audrey the same question that he asks all the boyfriends. What are your intentions with my daughter? To which Audrey replies, only the best. Back in the couch interviews, they're all saying, oh, Audrey's just, she's so easygoing. She's comfortable in her own skin. They really like her. And it's because their family is accepting of different. Okay, let's just cut the shit. They just had to sit through 6 months of Tony mouth breathing all over their daughter and their tacos that they took another mortgage out for. So at this point, anyone is better than Tony. The only thing I'd say Tony is better at, however, is not using the word like as every like other like word, like all McKelty's like friends. Oh, it was bad. Now, the Women's March. I'd rather watch Tony try to zip up his gray jeans after he hit up the taco buffet than have to watch the hour of that Women's March footage. Mary said she didn't even know what the march was about because, and I quote, politics are stupid to me. Well, your face is stupid if you ask me. And the whole time Janelle and Mary were saying everyone was so angry. There was just an angry energy. Now, I know several people, as I'm sure you do too, who were at the DC march and angry energy and the feeling that it was just so scary were the complete opposite adjectives they used to describe it. I went to the one in Chicago with my mom, sister, nieces. I brought my own 7-year-old daughter, one of my best friends, her mom was there. It was nothing but empowerment, sisterhood, solidarity. I mean, it really was an awesome privilege to share that experience with the strongest people I know and hopefully the strongest women I will know as my nieces and my daughter grow up. And, you know, you meet strangers and you bond over this unspoken link between us all. That's the point. And to be able to share that experience with your daughter, Mary, I mean, I can tell you, she missed an opportunity to really feel something profound and bigger than just herself. But instead, Janelle and Mary just look miserable, moping around and bitching and moaning about how they can't find Mariah and her friends. Well, anyway, they go out to eat, but really no one ate, and it was pissing me off because all that food looked delicious and the plates were going uneaten. But Mary scoots the friends away from the table so she can talk to Mariah and Audrey. Okay, whatever. It was fine. Except when Mary said, and she's let this slip once before, she had certain expectations for Mariah growing up. And since she never had a son, when Mariah would get married, her son-in-law would be like her son. Wow. Care to tell that to Logan, Hunter, Garrison, Gabriel, Peyton, Dayton, and Solomon? You know, the 7 sons in the family where you're considered a mother. For real though, think about those kids watching that episode last night and hearing that. That has got to hurt. Now, what we're left with, I don't know how many shows we have left of the season, but what is the over-under on Mary leaving after this show, right? I mean, she's not sticking around after the show goes off the air. Well, next up, Sister Wife. But first, meet my girl Kim, the host of People Are Wild. I'm not just saying this. She is hilarious and smart. She's going to make you feel smart after you listen to her. And her They Got What Stuck Where is my favorite.
Hey, This is Kim, your friendly neighborhood ER nurse. I'm the host of People Are Wild, the only podcast that claims to bring medical entertainment, medutainment, on a weekly basis. I can be found on your favorite podcast listening app, iTunes, and Google Play, and you could talk to me on Twitter at People Are Wild.
And now it's time for Seeking Sister Wife. I think we have all suffered through enough sister wives today to start with Dabella Dabal, the Snowdens, the one family that has been getting some facts laid down by a former member of the family. The former sister wife Ashley talked about earlier on in the season. Oh yes, her receipts have been floating around, here and there, and the apples in her orchard brought it all together. So the credit solely goes to them. I am simply the messenger, okay? I don't know, was that Lisa Renner who said that? First, I think it's important to recap how things shook out last night, and then we are going to cross-reference. Dimitri begins the episode making some tea. Oh, the irony of making and spilling the tea was not lost on me. He calls Ashley in to ask her what she's thinking about. How he chose to cheat on her with a 22-year-old. I know you said you had to process and think. You know, we all make mistakes. I make mistakes. Yes, I know that sounds unapologetic, but I appreciate your patience. We have a framework and guidelines, and in my excitement, I violated that. Okay, you know what? Fuck off with your use of extraneous words that you probably used a thesaurus for to make yourself feel smart. Now, his website, DimitriSnowden.com, is probably the most self-aggrandizing thing I have seen in a long time. Now, let me read to you from his bio. Dimitri Snowden is an ontological architect and change agent. But wait, WTF is ontology. Okay, he wrote that. Okay, that's not me just hypothetically asking you what that is. As an ontological architect and change agent, Dimitri Snowden subscribes to the philosophy that what people design designs them back. Design thinking. In other words, the digital journey he designs for his customers will be redesigned by his customers. Dimitri's ideation knows no boundaries, and his job begins with the customer. Through deep behavioral insights about customers, employees, and intermediaries combined with his ontological expertise, he helps companies pinpoint the right innovation opportunities and technologies to create high-value, low-risk digital transformation experiences. So I tell him what I want to do. Then he looks at me and says, "That's the question. What do you want to do?" Okay, and then I say, "Thanks, change agent. You changed the way I think. What the fuck is going on?" All right, that sounds like a whole bunch of BS to me, but you know, I'm no ontological architect. Now this brings us to the kitchen with these two sipping their tea. They make a plan to basically ambush Jocelyn under the guise of a friendly date between the three of them. Now this is just the morning after this late night rendezvous, right? That Dimitri initiated when he encouraged Jocelyn to try sake and then go for some more late night drinks, and then they spent the night together at her house. Now, I'm not insinuating that Jocelyn didn't consent. We don't know that. But if I were her, I would be under the assumption that this man is out with me with his wife's consent because I was there and heard her consent when we were at the lunch together. Now, Ashley seems to be putting the blame squarely on Jocelyn's shoulders, that she should have put, I don't know, Ashley on speakerphone as Dimitri put his hair into a ponytail with a scrunchie and slipped on a condom. Hopefully, but more on that shortly. But fast forward to the lunch, where Jocelyn is sitting there like Bambi, okay? She's just waiting to be picked off by a hunter disguised as a mama deer. Jocelyn hasn't talked to Dimitri, so she doesn't know if he's told Ashley that they hung out or not. So there is a huge, massive cumulus cloud. Is that right kind of cloud? It's just super awkward, okay? So now Ashley just starts asking her generally, oh, how was dinner? What did you do? And Dimitri's just sitting there, not helping Jocelyn out, not jumping in. He's just letting her take all the heat. And Jocelyn can tell that Ashley is clearly unhappy. Now, I think Jocelyn asked a pretty good question to Ashley at one point. She said, so are you comfortable with adding someone else in the relationship? And Ashley says, yeah, but, well, maybe the info I'm going to share with you will shed some light on that. So Jocelyn says, well, okay, it's about time for her to go, to which Ashley says, yeah, it's time for you to go. And you can see Jocelyn just kind of, I don't know, roll her eyes or raise her eyebrows as she leaves, like, did that really just happen? Did you guys really just use me and sleep with me last night? He's telling her, oh, he believes in love at first sight and his wife is all good with this. And then they don't even get up to say goodbye. Well, Ashley and Dimitri were just complete assholes to me at this point. Later, Dimitri tries to say that he's happy about having had this challenge and blah, 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 bullshit change agent. And scenes for them next week show them back in the saddle looking online again. Well, settle in for a ride here and stay with me. This is all based on photos, text messages, and postings on various social media. I did not personally talk with this person. I am merely reporting what I see and what other people have seen. I am not going to use her real name because it is here. You know, I'm not like some New York Times fact checker or shit, but if you were to see these and those of you who have seen this, I don't even think you can argue that they are not legit, but I'm going to be honest, I just paid off my student loans and credit cards this year and we are debt free. So I'm not looking to get sued. This is all allegedly. So take from this what you will. Now, pardon me, you're going to be hearing some paper flipping, but it's going to add to the effect of some receipts, girl. All right. It starts with a post. My name is, I'm going to leave it out. Okay, let's just call this person Becky. Okay, Becky with the good hair. I'm a former sister wife of Dimitri and Ashley Snowden. It saddens me to see how things are still the same with Dimitri. He was cheating on us when I was there. In fact, I have text and Facebook messages from him to some of the women he was sleeping with. It was only 1 year ago I was thrown out of the house after Ashley decided she didn't want me there anymore. I refused to be her lover, and she took that as me not wanting her, only Dimitri. Before I was thrown out, Ashley took the children and went to Cincinnati and left Dimitri to do the dirty work. While he and I were there without her, he had another woman sleep over without my knowledge. There was so much trauma my daughters and I experienced while being there. It was horrible. Ashley is an enabler and her husband, a sexual deviant. I thought she was my sister and I loved her very much. So when she left me with no explanation, that destroyed me because I thought she was sincere. But I found text messages from her to Dimitri saying awful things about me and my children. It was hard to see them take their dysfunction to a national level. Even if the girl Jocelyn is a paid actor, what has happened speaks volumes to their morality and actual interest in living a healthy polygamous lifestyle. Okay, now, followed up by this, to prove this to me, allegedly, is real, there are photos of her with her children, with Dimitri and Ashley and their children in front of a house that they lived in Atlanta. Okay, I'm flipping through his mother, there are photos of the three of them together. Not only together, but they are both kissing Dimitri on the cheeks at the same time. There's another photo of Ashley and Becky, who is beautiful, by the way. It looks like they're having a nice little picnic together. Now, we also have some text messages coming from Becky's phone to Ashley. You can see it. It's clearly a screenshot. This is not, you know, retyped or anything like that, allegedly. And she's going to mention two other girls. Let's just call them Kim and Nene, okay? To Ashley, this is from Becky. Just thought you should be made privy to this information since you guys are big on sharing info with each other. Dimitri was fucking Kim. He fucked Kim's cousin, Nene, who he had coming by the house to check on you. He was dealing with a woman named blank, this is a whole other woman, who lives in Vegas. Oh, and did you know that he and Kim and her boys were in Tennessee together, in quotes? Did you know he loves Kim? I have a message from him and Kim, him and Nene, and a few other women. He sent Nene to an STD clinic and asked her to stop smoking, told her if he had been getting more sex from you because you have been sick with child, that he wouldn't. Pardon me as I flip the receipt. Something, there's like one little line missed, and then that he wouldn't have slept with Kim. This is Ashley replying now. Becky, it is women like you who prevent the collective of womanhood from escaping the sickness of patriarchy. You haven't informed me of anything, my dear. A simple call to Verizon so that I can understand the terms of my account would have sufficed. Peace, darling. To which Becky replies, you seem to be hung up on me being wicked, and surely him lying to you about his interactions with me after I left the house would make you think so. But you are sleeping next to a wicked man who preys on vulnerable women and uses you to pull them in. Most of the women he pursues, pardon me as I flip, something, I'm a victim here, you are actually too. Then she says, that is your wish for me. To which Becky replies, no. Ashley replies, don't put it on anyone else. Becky says, no, that's your fate. You chose to allow Dimitri to continue this shit, or maybe you just don't know. Ashley then says, I don't control anyone but myself. We are all responsible for our own fate and karma. Deal with your shit, and I'll deal with mine. To which Becky replies, touche. Now, that is some tough stuff to argue right there. Now, I'm also going to read just a little bit to you to an article that was published in 2011. And this is in regards to Dimitri's, ontological architecture career. The co-founder of an Indianapolis charter school is facing new allegations he defrauded schools and small business owners out of thousands of dollars. Dimitri Snowden, the co-founder of the Indianapolis-based Paramount School of Excellence, was named in a lawsuit brought by KIPP Academy, another Indianapolis charter school, which is sponsored by Mayor Greg Ballard and funded by public tax dollars. The school accuses Snowden and his information technology company, IM360, of breach of contract, fraud, and deception, totaling $45,796 in damages. The Paramount School of Excellence also contracted with Snowden's company, but fired him and is now seeking legal action. Nicole Hatfield, a small business owner, told this reporter that she paid Snowden $1,300 to build her website for her company, but he failed to deliver. Now, fast forward through a lot of this. According to the lawsuit brought by KIPP, IM360 pressured the school to purchase products and services it did not need and could not afford and failed to provide the promised responsive service and rapid resolution to technology issues and problems. So take what you will from this. In my opinion, this is only my opinion based on these alleged screenshots and things, Dimitri's a snake, okay? He is a narcissist. He speaks bullshit, layered in bullshit. He even believes it himself. He seems to have issues in business, clearly, and I think Ashley is guilty in enabling him to draw women in under the guise of safety and this idea of family and sisterhood, only to toss them to the side. To me, this sounds a lot more like polyamory than polygamy, and I would love to know what the Browns, the Brinies, the Aldridges, what they think of the Snowden's definition of polygamy. Now, there's no real easy segue in or out of this next family because, quite on the contrary to the Snowdens, this was absolutely heartbreaking to watch. The Aldridges are still dealing with the discovery that Vanessa may have had some issues with her pregnancy. They head to a nurse midwife who practices out of her home Zumba gym in the basement, and she unplugs the Wii U and switches to HDMI 2, and she starts the ultrasound machine. Unfortunately, there is no baby, but a rather large mass, which turns out to be a molar pregnancy. A molar pregnancy really isn't a pregnancy at all. It's your body just reacts to this growth or this tumor, releases the same pregnancy hormones. So if Vanessa were to pee on a stick, it would show positive. Well, obviously, Vanessa is heartbroken. So they head home, tell the kids, and the next day, Vanessa and Jeff go to the hospital for the surgery to remove the mass. Charisse is helping a lot at home, taking care of the kids. She's sad for Vanessa, but she's also still feeling a loss and a deep desire to have another sister wife around. Scenes for next week show Melina calling Charisse, and Charisse looks like she will need a sister wife around to help change her because it looks like she just about shits her pants. Finally, the Brinies. Ooh, anyone feel a sudden chill like April might be staring at us right now or listening? It's no wonder Arlie is straight up giddy right from the jump, and she is as chipper as a Disney princess because she is out of the house on a date with Drew. They're at Dalton's Steakhouse in Payson, Utah. You know it's my favorite part looking up these reviews. Pretty mixed on this place, except on Wednesday nights. At Dalton's, there is a gal that sings in the form of acoustic guitar, according to Yelp. Fun fact, Evelyn Cormier must travel to Utah for her super special friend on Patreon who pledges $1,000 a week. Thankfully, Drew's back is feeling much better than it was when he was on his trip with April, but Arlie has seen a difference in April's mood since they've been back. However, Angela really hasn't. She and April are not getting along. Angela tends to retreat, go to her room, avoid April, so that causes some animosity in April's heart. So Drew has an idea that's going to cheer everyone up. Camping! Okay, I liked camping before I had kids, okay? I camped nonstop for a month out in the wilderness of Africa, but that was before I had a bladder that had to be emptied every hour. I mean, the thought of camping now with kids, you might as well just tell me to pack up the house we're moving tomorrow. I mean, all the unpacking and the cleaning, and then when we get home, it's just, why not just go outside and pretend it's nighttime? Chalk that up to another reason why I wouldn't be a briny wife, because these wives love it. So the next day, the wives sit down to plan for the trip. Okay, see what I mean? You got to plan for this shit. Angela is down for s'mores and making it easy. Let's just hot dog on a stick, boom, done. I don't disagree with her, but it better be an all-beef hot dog. There's no mixing pig cheek and asshole stuff, all right? Well, for April, at the words hot dog, she had like a robot reflex. Head turned, eyes go glazed, crazy, unnecessary smile. I am so happy to be planning this together. Usually I'm the one pushing things along. I love this. Thanks, Arlie. Ooh, I mean, that is so backhanded. And you can see Angela and Arlie are just biting their tongues and gritting their teeth down to the nubs. What about side dishes? Okay, well, I'm with Angela when Angela's like, fruit snacks. I mean, you're camping. Side dishes. How about go grab some chips, some pretzels? I mean, who the hell is preparing side dishes when you're camping? Well, April was not going to let that go with the fruit snacks. She skips about a beat and a half and then says, I'll be surprised if Angela feeds her baby fruit snacks. It's not organic. Whoa, that is some fighting words when you start talking about parenting style. That is like the ultimate low blow. So they've been talking about what they're going to eat, but April just continues to stare at Arlie and Angela. And then again, a robot switch. So meals. We're all doing meals together then? So you like the idea of cooking together? That sounds fun to you, does it? Angela, is that going to coincide with Lenny's nap schedule? Okay, you know what? Angela won't say it, but I will. Fuck you, April. You quickly forget what it's like to have a baby. It's her first. And if it works for her to have her kid on a schedule or not on a schedule, why is it any of your business? And if it's bothering you, April, that a baby is napping for some reason during your day, well, then that is your own deal. Instead, Angela is a much more calm person than I and says something like, I can't guarantee that, but I said that I like that idea. I'm not sure why we're still talking about it. I already stated that I want to cook together. And then April kind of snottily laughs. I don't think you catch my drift. Yeah, no one is catching your drift. Thank God. I don't want any backdraft of any drift you got. Well, then we get to hear exactly what April's drift is. She thinks Angela uses her son Lenny as an excuse not to have to help around the house with the kids equally. Instead, she uses them and Drew to serve her. Oh boy, I bet Angela is melting ice caps with the steam coming off her head today after seeing that last night. You know, April, just last week, we saw Angela frying up bacon and making sandwiches for your kids while you galloped around a pasture, so I would keep your gappy tooth mouth shut. But April isn't done with all her pent-up psychosis. Angela, you want to be in charge of all the cleanup? Well, Angela is just too stunned for words, as I'm sure all of us were, and Arlie is like, no one wants to be in charge of all the cleanup. I think I can help with that. April, how about you do it since your kids comprise probably half this family and the mess, okay? Oh my God, I'm going to need someone to pass me a Xanax today because, damn, between the Snowdens and Janelle and Mary and, oh my God. All right. Well, now they're outside taking this inventory of what they're going to need to pack up for the trip. And April, again, tries to stir it up, start some shit up. And she's insinuating that Angela has some huge bedroll, like, oh, it's going to take up too much room in the car. And Angela is at a breaking point. I think we've all been in those places where someone is being so passive aggressive. And it's that what's so upsetting is that they think you're the stupid one, that you don't realize what they're doing, but you do, and you're just being the better person. So Angela tells Drew they need to talk, and she basically just lets it all out. April is the monster that we all know she is, and they all know she is. Unfortunately, Drew's advice is to tell April what she wants to hear. But the difference is, Drew can do that. He gets a break from April for several days at a time. But Arlie and Angela are with her all the time. Now, we're at the campsite, and what do you know? Drew's back is flared up again. Anyone noticing the common denominator when his back flares up? Comes after March, rhymes with Schmaprel. Well, Drew is hobbling around like a community theater actor portraying the town leper that no one wants to be near. And then, as if we needed more proof that she is an alien from another planet, April appears with a full, straightened blowout and a white sweater. Who wears white camping? And who straightens their hair when you have naturally curly hair, gets a blown out, when there's certainly going to be humidity and dew in the morning? Like, what kind of species is she? What's next? She pulls out a manicure pedicure set to do fireside? Oh, who am I kidding? April is caring. She's concerned for her sister wife, Angela, who is still not there. Oh, I hope she gets here before dark. Oh, yes, her baby sure does look hungry. Where could she be? I hope she's not lost. Now, deep down, April knows that Angela is upset about something, and that's not good because when Angela's upset, according to April, she retreats and you can't change someone like that. Well, April would know. She's probably had a lot of people retreat from her, sometimes with the aid of a restraining order, and it's true. You can't change that. So while Angela is still on her way, they start setting up the tents. And when she arrives, she finds that her tent is going to be set up, oh, over yonder, on that incline. Boom. Zoom to April. She's sitting in her folding chair next to Drew, petting her daughter's hair. And her eyes are just glowing with glee. And Drew says that he likes sleeping on an incline. Thanks for the tip. Do you need me to get your walker or your double crutches? Are you doing okay? Yeah, I think I'm going to stick with horizontal. Thanks. Now, we shall see how this camping trip shakes out next week, but I'm really hoping that we get some family therapy going for them. Someone on the outside, a third party, calling April on her shit. I mean, it really is crazy. We cannot blame editing on all of that. There may be some, but come on, it's pretty hard to deny April's intentions here. All right, this week coming up, we have Teen Mom OG, Married at First Sight is going to be back, and the Love After Lockup finale on Friday, of course. I will give you some details on what is coming up on Patreon later this week. That's at patreon.com/realityvpod. Find me everywhere else at realityvpod or realitytvpodcast.com, and you can link from there. Happy President's Day. Stay salty.